This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't love junior mints. I just don't hate them. I don't understand why they are treated like second-class candy.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Oh, there's a, you there's don't a understand why a candy that is basically toothpaste wrapped up in stale chocolate is treated like a second-class candy. All right, I get it. It's a good, valid question.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Is there a time to change? You know, the three teams I've drafted this year, second-class candy is pretty good.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back to Roswell Park, the Ride for Roswell kickoff event. Mike Shope here with Sal Capaccio today, and we are joined by Andrea Gregory, the director of the race. It's a nice title. It's a big title.
Got a big team.
It's a big team.
That does a lot of work.
It's a big event, and even today is a big event.
It is.
A lot went into this, I bet.
Oh, yeah. This is kind of our start of the season kind of for us, and we have probably 300 to 400 people here at Roswell tonight getting ready and gearing up for this year's event.
How do they do that? What do they do today? Get started?
Yeah, so it's actually the middle of what we call Spirit Week. So we've had lots of different things going on. It started on Monday this week. We had a Meet Your Minimum matching gift courtesy of Wester. We had a big team contest yesterday that we started. And then today we talked a lot about where the funds go because it's so important to understand why we're raising the money that we are. And so our kickoff event is kind of a combination of two things. It's a great opportunity for our people to come out and see each other. Because it is that. It's a community of people, a community of supporters, and so it's really fun for all of us, for all of the riders to come out and see each other because we haven't seen each other a lot in a while. And so we have different fundraising tools here. We've got different information about what's called our Celebration of Hope, which is our Friday evening celebration. There's some of those details here. But the really cool thing that we started last year is we allow our fundraisers to go out on tours. So we have, we had over 100 people go out on our first tour group, and we've got another tour group going out in a little bit. And they're visiting places that we're funding. So the money they're raising is directly impacting research, clinical trials. It's helping quality of life programs. And so our fundraisers out there right now learning about what the difference their money makes. And that's so important because it really inspires people to do more, right? And it encourages them to raise even more and to really understand so that when they're asking for those donations, because we all know it's not easy to ask for money, they really know and feel empowered to where it's going. So it's a really great night for us.
And what is the realization of the answer to that question, where it's going? You can't you can't necessarily go line by line for me,
right.
But I mean, if you can get us a general overview of what happens when people are donating and where this money goes.
Yeah, absolutely. So we always talk about kind of two different things. So it helps research. Mm-hmm. So it's helping the patients of tomorrow, right? Research, clinical trials, those who are currently going through it. And then it helps quality of life programs. So that's a lot of the patients that we currently have. So to just kind of give some detail around all of that, in a given year, we fund about 50 quality of life programs, and there's over 40,000 patients that come through Roswell Park's doors in a given year. So there's lots of different ways that we help. We have our 11-day Power Play Cancer Resource Center here. We have our newer CAP Elevate Salon. We have a nursing center of excellence that trains our nurses. We've got pediatric programs that are funded. All of these different things are helping current patients, and so those are a couple of the places that our riders are out currently visiting. And then on the research and clinical trials side of things, we are funding current clinical trials, right? That is the research that's been taken from the bench in the laboratory and is now at a point where patients can have access to these new cutting-edge trials. And so they're visiting our cell therapy lab right now and learning about CAR T cell therapy, which is really cutting-edge. And we just had a huge build-out that has these clean rooms.
I toured it.
Amazing, right?
It was unbelievable.
Oh my gosh, it was.
I went into this thing is these things are incredible.
It
and
is.
And the what I learned about the history of them and how it came about here and what you have here compared to everywhere else is absolutely amazing.
It is. So we now have 20 of those rooms. It's
wow.
Like the largest in the country, outside of an academic space, and it they really are taking what I said from the bench in the labs to being able to take these cutting-edge treatments for patients. We've got, they're out visiting our CervaxM lab, which is our brain cancer vaccine. That brain cancer vaccine started as a seed grant. So we have what's called the Scientific Advisory Committee, and it's a group that meet twice a year, and it's funding from the Alliance Foundation, so funding from our riders that is helping what are called seed ideas get off the ground. So it's an idea that can't necessarily be funded by the National Institute of Health yet, but it's these ideas to take that idea and grow it so that we can get dollars elsewhere. And so for every dollar that we put into this scientific advisory committee, it multiplies by 23, which is unbelievable. And so CervaxM is actually one of those examples of something that started with seed funding from the RIDE many, many years ago and is now in a phase two clinical trial helping patients with glioblastoma. So there's just, it translates in so many ways, and it's not just helping patients here, but it's really helping patients across the country and around the world.
Amazing.
So it's unbelievable.
Dr. Candace Johnson earlier told us there's a limit as to how many riders are allowed to ride because of, you know, laws and whatever. So right now people are listening to us, rideforroswell.org. Donations, of course. Volunteers, is there room?
Oh, we have room for lots of things right now. So we have plenty of space for our riders.
Okay.
Our ride is from 4 miles up to 100. So we've got lots of different varieties for people that are riding with their kids or they're riding with, you know, loved ones or they're serious, intense cyclists. We have something for everyone, really. So we've got it from, like, our youth, our recreational riders, all the way up to our endurance riders. We do have volunteers. We're always looking for volunteers, not only throughout the week, but all through the weekend. And all of that can be found at rideforroswell.org. This year, our riders are all asked, if you're 16 and older, there's no registration fee, but we are asking everyone to raise at least $200, which is very doable, and we're giving out some great resources tonight, and we've got lots of tips on our website, but we're asking everyone to do that to really help. We're reaching for a $6 million goal this year because, as I talked about, all the things need funding, and it's so important for us to continue to push to end cancer, and this event is one of the ways we can do that.
Like Sal alluded to, and you said, how the tours really do bring it to light.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly can appreciate the incredible expertise and, you know, talent of the doctors, the huge staff here, but to go into the different rooms and hear the explanation of how they came up with different, whatever, treatments was really, really awesome.
It's fascinating.
Well, it's our honor to be a part of it.
Thank you.
Andrea, and go get on that tour, right? Are you the tour guide?
I'm helping getting them all out, so.
Okay. We can't keep you any longer, so.
Thank you again.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for all of you guys, for everyone at your stations for helping with the ride this year.
You yeah. Got it. We're looking forward to it.
Great.
Sorry that Bulldog is in here, the captain of our team, but.
We'll send along your best to him. Thanks, Andrea. So, more loose ends. Justin Herbert.
Yes.
I had the score wrong. I had a different game.
Okay.
But, yes, against Minnesota.
Okay.
Possible week one Brazil tilt.
Sure. I think so.
40 for 47.
Amazing.
For 403 and three.
Touchdown.
Not bad.
Yep.
And a win. Not one of these garbage time deals.
And then Mike gave me that stat, and I went and put it in a query at Stathead, and I said, has anyone ever had 40 or more completions on 47 or less attempts? Nope. He's the only one.
Nobody's ever had that game other than Justin Herbert.
That's right.
In Minnesota. What's Josh Allen's best game for you?
Josh Allen's best game is, I think, Miami of 2020. Third game of the year, second game of the year. Breaks out.
Good. Good call.
Well over 400 yards, 450 maybe.
24 for
428.
24 for 35, 415 and 4.
Yeah.
And maybe rushing too. There's always that.
I mean, I have to go back and look at other stat lines, but to me, if you like, that stands out immediately.
We were doing this last week, going through his game logs.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Houston game last year? I think he went 9 for 30.
It was a bad game.
And there was the Dallas game that they won when Cook went off, where I think he went for 74 yards. Couple games in his career, even post-rookie season, where the numbers – this was a lot last year, actually, relatively speaking for him. Like the big blow-up passing games were just really not there for the Bills last year. One or two. The game that sort of topped the list when we talked about this last was the Seattle game in COVID.
Oh.
31 for 38.
He was great in that game.
415 and 3, so almost the Herbert game.
I think that was the weekend after his grandma had passed away.
Oh, okay.
And he was pointing up, and there was a story of that, obviously, and that's what happened with how the Patricia Allen Fund came about as well, by the way, speaking
okay,
of all this.
Okay, right. And then San Francisco, a month later, almost, in Arizona.
Now, that was prime time against Robert Saleh's defense, and that was that throw that he made that everybody talked about right over the top of the linebacker. Maybe it was Greenlaw. I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
Went right over top of him. Everybody talked about that. There was also that Rams game. They blew it, the lead, and they came back and won. But that year, he had a great game, too, that COVID year.
That's the year right? for, yes.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism, so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omicid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Four passing touchdowns in that game. Lee Smith.
What was he against the Raiders that year? In Vegas.
24-34, 288 and 2.
Okay. Less than
you
300,
know, the COVID year, those of us who live for passing stats got spoiled because the numbers shot up with no fans. San Francisco, 32 for 40, 375 and 4 in that game in Arizona. Denver, man, 2020. Who was the MVP that year? Oh, Rodgers would have been. Look at that season he had in 2020.
I mean, that Denver game, they win the division, and that's when they clinch the division for the first time in, you know, a long time and take it away from the Patriots. But that game, to me, even though Josh had great numbers, that game, to me, remembered for Jerry Hughes' fumble return, for Jake Kumerow.
Kumerow.
Catching the pass from Allen.
Singletary busted one.
Yeah, Singletary bust one for a long one. Yep.
Denver. Just had a thought about this. 2020, this was it. So, just the arrival, right? Like, this is real. 2019, they're in the playoffs, deep passes to fullbacks, laterals.
Yeah.
Who knows? 2020, right, this is real. And they have that season capped by, regular season, capped by that Dolphin game that the Dolphins need, and the Bills win by 30 when they don't need it.
Yep.
Like, you have just like a perfect year.
Isaiah McKenzie with like 3 touchdowns. Right,
right. Yeah. Right. Then you have the Colts game in the playoffs, which was tight. Davis bailed him out a little bit in that Colts game.
Yep.
Then it's Taron Johnson and the Ravens. And then it's Kansas City, Sal. And I've said many times, I'm not sure if we've talked about it much. We would have at the time. But it always just has not made sense to me how the Bills were so outplayed that night in Kansas City. The 2020 AFC Championship. I loved them in that game.
Really?
I thought, yes. I mean, it was just going.
And they had a lead. So, 9-0. Yeah.
They had a 9-0 lead. And I'm like, this is happening. Now, Kansas City got blown out in that Super Bowl by Tampa after that win. But I don't know. Do you have memories of that night?
I'm the opposite on that one.
Are you?
I just don't think the Bills were ready yet. And, I mean, I know they made a couple plays. I mean, I don't know if Lamar Jackson was ready yet to win a game like that. He didn't have a great game. The Bills knocked him out of that game. But I always look back at that game as, they just weren't ready for that setting yet. They weren't quite there.
I guess.
And the Chiefs already were.
The Chiefs had been.
Yeah.
They were the defending champs, I would think, right? They would have beaten San Francisco the first time.
Yeah.
Before that experience. I mean, the Bills.
Mahomes had been an MVP.
Yeah. The Bills were just not having bad days that year. And they were up 9-0, and then they were down 38-15. Like, it just went so south on them. One takeaway from that game were the 2 short field goals they opted for.
Yes.
And, you know, like, can't have that.
That was a kind of a defining moment for McDermott, because since that game is when he started to be more aggressive. And specifically the next year in Kansas City, they go for a 4th down early in the game to score a touchdown.
First drive.
Yep, first drive. But since that game, even more so over the last couple of years, he's become a much more aggressive coach on 4th down.
Yeah, that's, I suppose. But that's definitely right.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have thought to trace it to that, but it was definitely a takeaway from that game. Is, like, you know, guys, these 20-yard field goals are not gonna cut it. Well, he still gets, I think of you bringing this up a lot, maybe on Extra Point, like he still gets the grief, McDermott, for these losses, because they just have not gotten it done on defense in any of these games that they've lost in the playoffs. And for years, of course, with that, we get, you know, into these conversations about, well, if you don't want to make a coaching change, that's fine. You're in the playoffs every year, win the division every year. But so when will you want to, if ever? Like, when will you want to? And I always said, I just, like, this is last year, I would have said, and before that, you tell me they're going to have the same season, I'm not going to be sitting here thinking they need to fire Sean McDermott. Like, if you tell me they win 13 games and go to the AFC Championship, I just can't believe. I mean, I follow the Sabres. I do not expect to arrive at that place. This year, I think I'm, all right, one more.
Interesting.
I think I'm one more, because their defense has so failed them.
No matter how it goes, what if it's the offense that fails them?
If it's the same, I'm giving myself that.
Yeah, I got you.
Where if they go to,
yeah,
it doesn't have to be the Chiefs, Bengals. If they go somewhere in the playoffs or home, I mean, the game at home, they give up 9 yards a play. So, I have a playoff loss where I get 30 points put on me again by a Chiefs offense that couldn't score all year. Like, I don't know. That to me is kind of it. If I had an offensive coach and I got to the playoffs every year, and then after 5 or 6 of these I couldn't score, then you have that. But instead it would be this. So I think I'm at one more.
There is a segment of fans for sure that no matter how successful, how many wins they have, how many division titles they win, how many playoff games they win, if they don't get to a Super Bowl, it's just open season on McDermott, regardless of how that happens. There is definitely a segment of fans like that. That's what I push back on, which is I think it's an unrealistic expectation to think that, you know, you're just an automatic that you, because you have Josh Allen and you've been down this road, that you should win, be at and win Super Bowls, because it's very hard to do that. And you can have a bad day. You can have bad ball bounce go not go your way, whatever it is. So I think that's unrealistic. I understand, though, and respect the point, just as you have made here, that the defense has been pretty much the failing point at the end of the season games over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and it seemed like last year we were talking about how that was sort of sticking to Allen a little bit, and we all just went, well, let's see proof of that. I mean, in these playoff games, he's had some great days, or at least good days, not bad days, in their losses. What does it do for you? I brought this up yesterday, in terms of the Bills, that Kansas City got blown out.
Nothing, because I don't think anyone was beating the Eagles that day. The Eagles were a wagon. They were good. Real good. They have really constructed their roster terrifically, and they played and coached really good football. And that day specifically, no one was beating them.
No one was beating them, okay. The Bills aren't losing by 30 to anybody, I would say.
Do I think the Bills would have given them a better game than the Chiefs? I tend to think that, yes.
Anybody would have, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just
I tend to think that.
The Chiefs came off so due to lose. They were so due for that. Which makes all the season that happened so frustrating. Like, how much more could you have asked from the Bills last year? 13 wins. I mean, they don't even need week 18, right? Neither did Kansas City.
Right.
And Kansas City ran so pure in close games that wasn't even, with a head-to-head win, that wasn't enough for home field.
I listened to AFC Reverse Power Rankings with you and Joe yesterday, and I think Joe's right. When you look at Kansas City, I think that personnel-wise, they're not as good. They've lost personnel. They lost Justin Reed. They lost Nadi. They've lost players.
Tooney.
Yes, they traded Tooney. Their offensive line is still a very big question mark going into next year. We still don't know what Rashee Rice is going to be coming back from the injury, but we'll see. I agree with what Joe said in the power rankings. But at the end of the year, How can I sit here now and count them out because of what you said, which is, look how good they are every year at the end of the year. I get it. But as I sit here right now, like, the Chiefs to me are just not as good personnel-wise.
They're not as good personnel-wise. You know, we go back and forth on the Bills for this, too. Last year it was, they're not as good personnel-wise, right? I mean, they moved on from some important players. But what you had, not knowing what certain things were going to look like, wide receiver, safety, what you had was, Allen.
Yeah.
13 wins. And that's how I would look at the Chiefs.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, Mahomes. Okay.
That's how you should look at the Bengals, but it didn't work out for them like that.
What I want to see from Kansas City, or about them, is what happens, if anything, with Rice, and what happens, if anything, with Worthy. Even Worthy could still get dinged, even though he didn't have charges pressed against him. Like, I mean, Vaughn, like that can happen.
Usually it's a year later, though, when that happens anyway.
And that's where
why,
we are
that's
with Rice.
Rice. Exactly right.
And they're keeping Hollywood Brown. If they have them all, and Kelsey's going to play. If they have them all, that's pretty daunting, I think. Mm-hmm. We'll see about up front. But they may not have them all. So.
And I'm not convinced that Travis Kelce is a huge difference maker at this point. He can be in any one given game.
Right.
I just don't think for a season long he is.
Spots, you know?
Yeah.
Still somebody that you got to take seriously.
Yeah.
No matter how much he might have slowed down. All right. From the Ride for Roswell kickoff event, rideforroswell.org, we're going to bring you our chat with, part of it anyway, with Chris Trapasso. He was on with us for an hour. If you missed that, you can check it out at the Odyssey app, and we'll have the first half or so of that here coming up. Mike Shope with Sal Capaccio from Roswell Park. This is WGR.